Okay, so we're going to take another pause from our study of baptism. We're going to cover a topic that will be somewhat related to the topic I discussed with you a few weeks ago. As I thought about what to study with you today, it's my daughter's birthday this week, and one of her favorite stories is Esther, and so I thought we could study from the book of Esther together. The other reason I wanted to study from the book of Esther, I'm going to have a class in, I don't remember if it's next semester or the following semester, but the purpose of the class or the idea of the class is to take some Old Testament stories, some individuals in the Old Testament, look at some of the qualities that they have that we should have as Christians and study those qualities and then apply them to our lives as Christians. So I thought it could be a little bit of a cheap advertisement for my next class. And if you're interested in it, then maybe you can come to that class. So turn your Bibles to the book of Esther. That's where we'll spend almost all our time this morning. While you're turning there, and this is a story you know, we're just going to pull some, hopefully some things that are maybe you forgot or maybe look at them a little bit differently than the way you've looked at them in the past. Help me as you're turning to the book of Esther. Who are the four main characters in the book of Esther? Esther, Mordecai, Haman, and the king. Okay. All right. So we are going to look at mostly Haman and Esther, but I want to begin with Mordecai. What do you know about Mordecai? What do we learn about Mordecai in the book of Esther? I'm sorry? Okay, so Esther's related to Mordecai. They're actually cousins. And Mordecai raises Esther. What else do we know? Strong in the faith, okay. Why do you say that? Yeah.
If you don't do it, God has a plan.
Yeah. So very, very devout Jew. We can see there's a couple of different examples where we see that, but certainly that's a great example when he goes to Esther and commands her to go before the king on behalf of the Jews. What else do we know about Mordecai?
He had a real strong sense of what was the right thing to do.
What was the right thing to do? Can you think of an example that helps you say that? Okay, so there's an assassination attempt on King Ahasuerus, and Mordecai learns of it and informs the king through Queen Esther about the assassination attempt to prevent it from happening. What else?
They were captives in that land.
Yeah. That was not his king. Yep. What else do we know about him? To your point, Tracy, it speaks to his strong sense of what was the right thing to do, you know, no matter the circumstance. Yeah. What else? Anything else? All right. He was humble. Okay. He refused to bow down. He refused to bow down and pay homage to who? I heard it. One of the other characters we mentioned? Haman. Okay. So we'll spend a little bit more time talking about that. Anything else about Mordecai? All right, he was from the tribe of Benjamin. It's interesting in chapter 2 when it describes Mordecai and it talks about his lineage, it refers to Kish. Does that name sound familiar to anyone, Kish? Saul's dad. Okay, so 1 Samuel chapter 9 verse 1, it talks about, you know, Saul's dad being Kish. And so perhaps it's the same Kish, but that would suggest he was, you know, the great grandson, I believe it is, of King Saul's dad. Anything else? Does anyone know what his job was? Do we know what he did? Doesn't really tell us, but other than the fact that it constantly refers to him being inside the king's gate. And he has knowledge of events that would suggest to us that he somehow works for the king in some capacity, some type of official, we're not sure what. But certainly, by the end of the book of Esther, do we know what position he's in? He rises to become the second in command for the king. Okay, so likely had a position before that. What's his? We talked about the fact that he raised Esther. Anything else we know about that? Anything we know about that relationship? Okay, so he offered her a lot of advice. He gave her a lot of commands. He had a very caring relationship with her. It was very much a father figure, father-daughter relationship, even though they were cousins. We'll see an example of that a little bit later. Okay. All right. Let's talk about Esther. What do we know about Esther? She was beautiful. Okay. We know she was beautiful. What else? She was an orphan, okay? Yeah, her mother and father were had passed away, so she was an orphan, which is why Mordecai was raising her. What else? Yeah, orphan. Anything else?
She listened to good advice.
She listened to good advice. Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Very brave. As we study this book together, I think what we're going to find is she had a lot of the qualities you're mentioning. She was brave. She was loyal. She was obedient. She was humble. She seemed to have this knack for people to like her, and we'll see that as we study together. Okay, Haman. What do we know about him? I'm sorry?
Arrogant.
What else? Powerful. Okay. Do we know where his position was with respect to the king? Yeah, he was really high up. We're not quite sure if he was maybe second, but he certainly was being promoted and advancing above all the other princes, and perhaps he was second, because what does the king give him? At some point in this story, that, you know, kings are pretty, his signet ring, okay? So the king certainly trusted him to write decrees that became law and seal it with his seal. Anything else that we know about Haman?
He was overconvinced of his own self-worth.
Okay, so he had a very high opinion of himself.
Yeah.
Very high opinion of himself. And we'll see as we study together some of the things he said about himself. That makes that pretty clear. Okay, anything else?
Evil.
He was evil. Why do you say that?
He was ruthless and wanted to destroy the Jews.
All right, he was ruthless and he wanted to destroy the Jews. What do you have against the Jews? Anyone know? Nothing. Except what? There's one thing that made him angry with the Jews. Mordecai was a Jew. That was it. He had nothing against the Jews other than Mordecai was a Jew. Okay, let's start chapter 1 together. I'm just going to walk us through the story. Again, we all know the story, but we're going to highlight some of the many things that you raised, and then we're going to spend some time looking at what can we learn from Esther. And what qualities did Esther have that we should have as Christians? And the way we're going to do that is we're going to do a little bit of a compare and contrast between Haman and Esther. Okay? So that's sort of the objective. So chapter 1, we did not spend time talking about King Ahasuerus, but he's obviously extremely prominent in the story. But beginning in chapter 1, he had a very large empire, 127 provinces. The span of it was from India to Ethiopia. And he's about to go fight the Greeks. And so he's throwing this party before he goes and fights the Greeks. He spent a year preparing to go fight the Greeks. He's throwing this party in chapter 1. It's been, they're 7 days into the party in verse 10. And by now he's really good and drunk. And so does anyone remember what he asks for? When he's drunk, so he wants Queen Vashti to come, and he wants to show her off. And why does he want to show her off? She's very what? Beautiful. Okay, you're going to find out that what's really, really important to the king is that his wife's beautiful. All right, she refuses to come. She refuses to come for. Probably a number of reasons, but perhaps one of the reasons is when you look in verse 11, the instructions is to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials. And as you study that verse and look at different commentators, and they dive into some of the historical writings of the time, the kind of working assumption is that the request was that she appear before the king with just the royal crown on. That's what the request was. So she refused to do that. So what happens to her? All right. So the king says, "This is a terrible precedent. Wives are never going to listen to their husband. You can't have someone saying no to the king." And so he divorces her, and she's removed as being the queen. Okay, so that's how we end chapter 1. Now, I think that story is important because it helps us establish, I'm sure, something that was in Queen Esther's mind when she was asked to go before the king, when you think about his reaction to this. Chapter 2, chapter 2 is after the battle, after the king has gone and battled the Greeks. It's probably a year after chapter 1, okay, so just help keep that in mind. A year has passed since the story we just went over in chapter 1. Chapter 2, the king has decided it's time for him to find a new queen. And so what are the qualifications for the new queen in verse 2? Beautiful, young, and a virgin. All right, so those are the qualifications. And in verse 5, we're introduced to Mordecai, and in verse 7, Esther, who we've already spent time talking about. And in verse 7, Esther is a young woman who is lovely and beautiful, so she fits the description of what the king's looking for. What happens to all these women who are young, beautiful, and virgins? Yeah, they go into 12-month beauty school, okay? So for 12 months, they're going to get them ready, all right? So they gather them all up, and Haggai, who is the custodian, the eunuch in charge of the women, he's in charge of gathering them all up and putting them through beauty school. And it's interesting, in verse 9, Esther, it says, pleased him, and she obtained his favor. And I want you to kind of think about that that phrase, because you're going to see it multiple times. And it speaks to what we were talking about earlier with Esther. She seemed to have a knack for people to like her. All right, and this is clearly an instance where Haggai liked her to the point that he gave her beyond her allowances. He gave her more attention and more help in the beauty preparations. Verse 10, Esther is told by Mordecai not to tell anyone she's a Jew. It's a command that she follows in verse 10, and it's repeated again in verse 20, that she obeyed the command of Mordecai not to reveal that she was a Jew. So then in verse 12, the 12 months are over. Okay, so the if we're doing the math from chapter 1, the beginning of chapter 2 is a year later. Beginning of verse 12 is another year later. Okay, and they all go before the king. And they're allowed to bring something before the, you know, when they go before the king. And Esther relies on Haggai's advice on what she should bring. She goes before the king, and we learn in verse 17 that the king loved Esther more than all the other women. Here it is again. She obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen. So here's a second instance where here's Esther finding favor in the sight of someone. So again, something about her personality made her very likable. Okay, then we have the story we talked about beginning in verse 19, or really in verse 21. Mordecai is sitting within the king's gate. Again, a reference to perhaps he was some type of official. He becomes aware of the assassination plot, tells Queen Esther. Queen Esther informs the king. They confirm it's true, and the king is saved. And interestingly, at the end of verse 23, this entire event, including the fact that Mordecai was the one that that discovered the plot and informed the king, is written in the book of Chronicles. And that's important. We're going to see that again. Okay. Chapter 3, King Ahasuerus has promoted Haman. It's the first time we're introduced into Haman. He's advancing beyond all the princes. Everyone in the king's gate, within the king's gate, are bow down to him except for Mordecai. Okay, and we learn the reason Mordecai won't bow down to him is because he's a Jew. Why does that tell us why he wouldn't bow down to him? Yeah, he's only going to honor God. He's only going to serve God. He's only going to worship God. He's not going to bow down to a man. He's not going to bow down to Haman. Mordecai tells some of the other servants of the king this, and so they inform Mordecai. They informed Haman. And in verse 5, Haman's filled with wrath, and Haman decides he wants to destroy not just Mordecai, but all the Jews, because those are Mordecai's people. So just think about that for a moment. Because Mordecai won't worship him, bow down to him, pay homage to him, he's decided he's going to wipe out an entire race of people. Okay, that's what he wants to do. We are, by the way, I should have mentioned this before, chapter 3 is 5 years after chapter 2, okay? So just, Esther has now been queen for 5 years, just to kind of help frame the timing of the chapters. So Haman goes to the king. He seeks permission to destroy the Jews. The king tells him he can do that. He writes a decree. That decree is sent around to all the provinces in the empire that in 11 months, the Jews will be killed. Okay? Chapter 4, Mordecai is obviously very upset with this news. In verse 1, verse 4, Esther is deeply distressed. And so then Mordecai, in verse 8, commands her to go before the king and to plead for the lives of the Jews. And so, how does she respond? She willing to go do it right away? She's afraid. What else did she say? Yeah, the rules to get to the king. And all right, and she wanted some time to prepare for it. So what's the rules? What's the rules about appearing before the king? You're not allowed to. And if you do, if you appear before the king without being invited, what's the outcome?
Death.
Unless what? There's one exception. Unless you find favor in the king's sight, and he extends the golden scepter. Okay? So, the conflict here for Queen Esther is she's being commanded by Mordecai to go do something. At the same time, she's a law-abiding individual, and the law says she can't go before the king. So she, as we all know, ultimately decides to do that. She asks for them to fast, asks for the Jews to fast 3 days for her, and then she determines that she will go before the king and plead their case. Chapter 5, she does that. She does find favor again in chapter 5, verse 2. Again, she finds favor in his sight. It's that phrase again. The king hands out or holds out the scepter to Esther, says, "What do you want? I'll give you half the kingdom." She says, "I want you to come to a banquet I'm preparing, you and Haman." And so they go to the banquet that night, and he says, "All right, what do you want?" And she says, "I want you to come to another banquet tomorrow night, you and Haman again." All right, so how's Haman feeling right now? He's feeling pretty good about himself, right? He just the king and Haman are the only two that have been invited to this party. Two nights in a row. So he's feeling pretty good about himself. It says he in verse 9 of chapter 5, he was joyful with a glad heart. Until what? Until he sees old Mordecai again. He sees Mordecai again. He gets upset, goes home, gets all his friends and his wife around, kind of has a little pity party about Mordecai. And what do they decide? What does his wife tell him they should do? Kill him. But how are they going to kill him? Hang him. All right. So they're going to hang him from some gallows. How tall are the gallows? All right, 50 cubits. All right. How big is a cubit? 1 cubit is what? Yeah, about 18 inches, right? Yeah, I saw. Yep. Elbow to the tip of the middle finger. And it depends on, you know, so call it 18 inches. All right? So I won't make you do math. Some of you have already shouted it out, probably because you got a footnote or you wrote it in your Bibles. 50 cubits is how tall in feet? 75 feet. Okay. So the plan is we're going to go build these gallows, 75 feet, and we're going to go tell the king the next day that we need to hang old Mordecai from the gallows. Okay? That night, the king has trouble sleeping. And so he does what all of us do. He goes and tells someone to read to him about history. All right? So they're reading to him about history. And what story comes up when they're reading in the Chronicles? How Mordecai saved the king. And so what does the king realize? What's he ask as he remembers this story about how Mordecai had saved him from this assassination plot? What does he ask? What do we do for Mordecai? And what was the answer? Nothing. So he needs to make this right. And so he asks, "Hey, is there any officials around that we can make this right on?" Who happens to be around? Haman. Well, why is Haman there so early in the morning? Because he's there to make sure the king agrees with his idea of hanging Mordecai from the gallows, 75-foot gallows. Okay? So the king says to him, "What should we do?" Verse 6 of chapter 6. "What should be done for the man who the king delights to honor?" All right, so he asked Haman that, and who does Haman think he's talking about? Him. All right, well, I'll tell you what you should do for me. How about put a royal robe that you've worn around this person, and then set this person on a horse that the king has ridden, and then put a royal crest on his head, and then have one of the king's most noble princes parade him around on this horse so that everyone can see him and honor this person. And we can proclaim, this is what's done to the man whom the king delights to honor. And what's the king say? Great idea. Go do it for Mordecai for me. So guess who's the prince that's going to carry the horse around? Haman. All right. Can you imagine Haman? Oh, I would have loved to have seen it. So they do it. Verse 12, Mordecai, he heads back to the king's gate. He goes back to work. Haman, what's he do? He's all depressed. He mourns. He covers his head. He runs back home. But then it's the time for the banquet. All right? So it's the second banquet that night. He arrives, and in chapter 7, the queen informs the king of the plot to kill the Jews. The king asks who did this. She tells the king it was Haman. The king's very angry, goes out into the garden. Haman, ironically now, realizing that the king's anger is very real, begins to plead with Mordecai's cousin for his life. And what happens when he's pleading, begging for his life? What happens to him? He what? He falls over on the couch where she's sitting right when the king walks in. So what's the king do? Hangs him. Where does he hang him from? The gallows that he built for Mordecai. Okay? And as the story goes on, the king becomes aware, obviously, that because the queen has told him that she's a Jew, Mordecai's a Jew, he allows Mordecai to allow the Jews to defend themselves, to prevent them from being destroyed. And the Jewish people are very much taken care of because Mordecai eventually becomes second in command under the king. Okay. So thank you for, hopefully that was a little helpful. I know most of you know the story, but some reminders, some things maybe we forgot. I want to talk about Esther and what we can learn from Esther. But the way I want to do it is I want us to first talk about Haman. All right, we threw out some words like arrogant. Let's throw out some other words. Was he selfish? Was he self-centered? He was vindictive, but doesn't start with an S, so David wouldn't like that. He's self-centered, selfish, self-absorbed. All right, you can tell him I came up with sinister. There we go. Okay, so flip back to chapter 3 when we're introduced to him. So he has been promoted. He is probably the king's second in command. He's advancing beyond everyone. Everyone's giving him a lot of respect. Everyone's paying homage to him except one person. And that gets under his skin so much that someone wouldn't honor him. All right? His pride is hurt, and he can't take it. He can't take it to the point that he decides to kill not just Mordecai, but all of his people. And we skipped over this intentionally. Look in chapter 3, verse 8. So when he goes to the king and he asks for permission, I want you to look at how sneaky he was at this and how deceptive he was when he went to the king. Because remember, his objective here, his pride is hurt. His objective here is you know, to go punish someone who hurt his feelings. So he tells the king in verse 8, there are certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in the provinces of your kingdom. Okay? He doesn't even refer to who it is. He doesn't even say it's the Jews. He just sort of says there's, you know, some people kind of scattered around here, kind of making it out like it's no big deal. It's just a few people, nothing you need to worry about. And their laws are different than our laws. And then he goes on to say that they do not keep the king's laws. Okay. Is there anything we've read in this story that tells us the Jews weren't keeping the king's laws? I mean, perhaps that was true, but nothing here that tells us that. So maybe he's referring to the fact that Mordecai, as an individual, wouldn't bow down to him. But it's, you know, I think it's a little bit of an exaggeration of the truth to achieve his objective here. And he is so incensed with this that he even offers to pay for it. Okay, at the end, he says, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver. into the hands of the into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasury. That's how much he was upset by Mordecai, that he was willing to pay for it. So then the decree is written. Now listen to this decree in verse 13. So it's going out to all the provinces. It's going out in multiple languages. There is to be no ambiguity in it. The decree is to destroy. But if you don't really know what destroy means, it means to kill. And if you don't know what destroy or kill means, it's to annihilate. Okay? We're going to kill, destroy, annihilate who? All Jews. Now, just to be clear, in case you are mistaken, we're just not trying to kill the male Jews. Who are we trying to kill? The young, all of them. Young, old, children, women. We're going after everyone. And how many days is this going to happen? One day. In one day, he wants it all done. They're going to kill, destroy, annihilate all the Jews in one day. And then they can take all their possessions. All right? Skip to, verse 5. Again, we looked at this. He was happy coming out of the banquet. Then he became unhappy because he sees Mordecai again. And he goes home and he has he has all his friends and he has his wife come to him. And this is what he says. I have great riches. I have a multitude of children. The king has promoted me. I've advanced above all the officials and the servants of the king. Queen Esther has invited me, just me, to the banquet. Verse 13, yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate.
So what's Esther for big whiny baby?
I don't know. I didn't think of that one. So the picture we're seeing here is someone who is entirely focused on themselves, just cares about himself, just cares about his pride. He's had success. He's rich. He's monetarily rich. He's got a family. He's being promoted. He has all these successes, and yet it's just not enough. It's just not enough because his pride's been hurt. He's upset, and he decides to take this very vindictive action against all the Jews. Okay? Before we go on to Esther, just a quick point. I'm not sure there's I haven't sat down and thought about this, but I'm not sure there's a story in the Bible that does a better job of explaining how the danger of letting one little thing eat at you than this. Okay, and I can certainly think of times where in my life where maybe I let something bother me and it got kind of grew and kind of blew out of proportion and kind of overtook me and kind of prevented me from thinking about everything I probably should have been thinking about. And that is certainly the case here, right? One man would not bow to him, and it turned into him being completely unhappy with everything in life and led him to write a law to annihilate a whole group of people. Okay? To the point that he built a gallows 75 feet tall to kill the man. By the way, does anyone remember offhand how tall was the ark that Noah built? Anyone know? Yeah, I heard it. 30 cubits. All right, this is 20 cubits taller than the ark of Noah's ark. Just to put it in perspective. Okay? All right, so here we have Haman, self-absorbed, self-centered, selfish, and we're comparing that to Esther, who was selfless, sacrificial, and served her people. Okay, so when we go to chapter 4, and Mordecai goes to her and says, you need to go plead for your people. And she returns the message to him and says, listen, the law is pretty clear on this. I go before the king, and I'm not invited. You know, the outcome for me is death. And Mordecai comes back and says, well, look, here are your options. First off, don't think for a second, just because you're the queen in the king's palace, that you're going to avoid the outcome of this. You are a Jew. And second, if you don't go before the king, we will still, the Jews will still be delivered. We'll be delivered another way, and your outcome will be that you perish for failing to do what God wants you to do. By the way, some of you probably already know this. This is, God is not at one point referred to in Esther. You don't see God, you don't see Father, you don't see, there's no reference to him, but he's certainly present, as we've already seen this morning. So Mordecai basically said, you know, you have to go. You have to go. And, you know, she thinks about it and ultimately decides to do it. And again, she asks for the Jews to fast for 3 days. And then she goes before the king. And what she say when she in the message, I will go before the king, which is against the law. And if I what? Perish, then I perish. Okay. How different is her reaction to this than what we saw with Haman? Does she care about herself like Haman was caring about himself? Who's she caring about here? The Jews, the people. Who is she being obedient to? Who's commanding her to go? Mordecai, God. And so we see an individual who unlike Haman, was focused on her people and not herself. We see a very selfless act. We see someone who is more willing to go serve her people than serve herself when she had every luxury and every reason not to have to do that, right? She was a queen. She didn't have to go do this. Who knew she was a Jew? King know at this point? No one knew, right? But in the end, she decided that it was better for her people. It was better for the Jews if she went before the king. And if that meant she lost her life, then she was going to lose her life. Okay. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about humility. And we talked about the importance of serving one another. And we talked about the story of how the disciples, and after Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, they got into an argument about who was the greatest. And then Jesus washed their feet and tried to teach them the importance of serving one another. And then we looked in Philippians chapter 2. In Philippians chapter 2, it talks about, Paul talks to the church there at Philippi, the importance of unity. Okay, and when he's talking to them about the importance of unity in chapter 2, he's telling them he wants them to be like-minded in verse 2, to have the same love, being of one accord and being of one mind. And then he says this to them. And I want you, as I read these words, to think about how well this describes Esther. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for your own interests, but also for the interest of others. The way we have unity, the way we obey the will of God, is to be selfless, to serve one another, to put the interests of others, of our brothers and sisters, above our own. And we saw that in a great example of Esther. Before we end, one other thing I just wanted to mention, because I don't think you can study this story without thinking about this, and that's the providence of God. It is hard to read that story without realizing the providence of God. And I think there's a number of instances you can look at the fact that Mordecai, who was a devout Jew, was in a position apparently to know information and share information through Esther that got to the king. Certainly, Queen Esther, being a Jew, being placed into the role, being chosen to be the queen when this decree was written, and having the ability to go before the king, the access to go before the king, speaks to God's providence. I think the part of the story that I just think is a great example of it, though, is at the end of chapter 5, I believe it is, when Haman's wife has told him to build the gallows and to go before the king and tell the king and get his permission to hang Mordecai the next morning. And that night, the king can't sleep, has the history books read to him, and within the reading of the history books, it's the story of how Mordecai had saved his life. And if that's not the greatest example of providence, I'm not sure what is. And so I think it's always important when we have these studies that we see that and recognize it and understand it and take comfort in it. Any comments or questions? Okay. Well, thank you for your kind participation.